the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I am exhausted today. I'm here as always with my co-host Len, who may or may not be exhausted. His status is unknown at the moment. What's going on there, buddy? How are things over there in your neck of the woods?
No, very tired over here. Weekends, and every weekend is usually very busy, and this is another one. I think this was the fourth of the fifth straight weekend. So 4 to 5 weekends, we were celebrating a birthday. So that on top of the regular stuff we normally do. And this past weekend was just a jumbled mess of everything. But you know what? It just makes the weekend go quicker. And that's what life is all about, with friends, with family, and enjoying it. And the weather's been great. Played some tennis, man. Played some golf. Love it. How about you, man? How's it over there?
Busy. We played football first time outdoor for the season on Saturday. Man, let me tell you, I love playing football. It's great. But it feels like every year my team just adds guys who are older than me. It feels like I've been the youngest guy on the team for like a decade, which is not good. But good times. We won our game. Then Sunday did a lot of I was moving actually wood from my dad's house to my father-in-law's house. My father-in-law's got a big fire pit that he takes advantage of quite often in the summer. And I take advantage of quite often in the summer. So did some labor there. And the usual stuff around the house, man. Busy. You know, gardening and whatnot. It's that time of year, eh? It feels good to be out there with the bags of mulch, you know, just dragging that shit around. It's just it never ends. There's never enough mulch for the garden. Do you find that? Are you a mulch guy? You mulch your front yard?
No, I use dirt. And a few years ago, we got the big bag of dirt. I'm not sure if you see those that come around.
The big yellow bag thing?
That's the one. And, you know, we actually had too much at that time. We were still able to use it. But over time, the soil kind of erodes. We got to get another bag soon. So we're not a mulch type of guy. Type of people over here. We like the soil, the black earth, and put it in there and rock and roll from there. And Joey, man, I have to say, I was, you know, in the Hamilton region this past weekend, King's Forest. I love that course. I don't play that too often. I used to play it multiple times a year when it was we used to get deals in it, and those deals are now long gone. What a great course. It's a challenge and a heck of a walk too. I'll say this though, it's a 10 times easier to walk than Chidoak, especially the Martin. Walking the Martin is a challenge. Walking King's Forest, longer course, it feels like you did nothing at the end. You could do it again.
Really?
Two or three times. Yeah, it's flat and straight for the most part. Like flat and long. The Martin, man, what a walk that is. Just a FYI.
It's brutal. I this is like, you know, Canadian Bitcoiners commute podcast. I parked my car at the top of the Chidoak golf course stairs last week and this week to go into work. I gotta tell you, today, like walking up that hill and then doing the stairs at the end, I'm tired right now. I'm tired and sore, which is rare. I rarely get sore, but I can feel it. My quads and the bottoms of my feet also getting sore. But anyway.
So I need some time. Shoes, better shoes. That could be.
I know. Where should I get some Sauconys or something, or some New Balance?
I have no idea. You have to get something that's more tailored towards your shoe. It may be from this brand or that brand. I don't know. You just have to seek out the right advice.
We got to find out. Anyway, so thanks for listening to that, everybody. We're going to do a sponsor, and then we'll do some housekeeping, and then I'll show you the shirt design that we're going to be selling at the Canadian Bitcoiners Conference. So anyway, EasyDNS, you know them, you love them. We know them, we love them. Mark is a friend of the show. Even before he sponsored us, friend of the show. Lots of stuff going on over there. Obviously, uncancelable if you host your content with them, which we are working on. They also have domains, DNS, web hosting, virtual private server, VPS hosting. You got a Bitcoin node? Go there. BTC Pay server? Go there. Nostra Relay? Go there. And of course, like, move your email away from that. Len, we're guilty of this. Eh? We're still using Gmail for the show account, but man, we got to get off that, and we got to maybe do it with Mark and his DNS, because that's where we're moving all our stuff here slowly but surely. Also, you can buy all that stuff together, or you can take a little this, a little that, a little A, a little B, little friends, little enemies, whatever. And just make sure when you go, CBP Media. That's the code. Or tell Mark we sent you. And if you got questions, his team will help you with the migration. They'll help you with the transport. They'll help you transfer. They'll help you with the whatever. Okay. Those guys are good. I have yet to hear a bad thing about Easy DNS. And I will also say that some of the guests we've had on talk to me after the show and say like, oh yeah, Easy DNS. I love those guys. My uncle has been in tech for a long time. Oh, Easy DNS. Those guys have been around a long time. No one has anything bad to say about Easy DNS. We love them and we hope you'll check them out. What do we got for housekeeping booths? What's going on? What do you think?
The only thing I have are booths, and it's a fair number of them, but I whittled it down to the better ones. So Mo BTC Dick writes in, this is for the Mitchell and Ray episode, the Canadian AG sector. We were talking at that episode. Well, he says, farm to table seems like the way to go, especially if able to pay with BTC bullish. Yeah, I totally agree. Doug and Roop writes in, interesting link between some of these discussions and recent book Fraud Coin. Crazy how inflationary policies can be linked to so many topics. Inflation policy leads to fiat farms producing fiat food. Agreed 100% there. JF Southwest writes in, as a farmer from southwestern Ontario myself, this episode really resonated with me. At 18, my father had to sell the dairy cows and quota because milking cows was no longer a viable financial option for our family. We are currently trying to build up a grass-fed rotational goat business, and BTC will be accepted without question. Incredibly impressed with both Mitch and Ray and their depth of knowledge. Great episode, and glad you guys took on this topic. Yeah, that was absolutely fantastic. I have some more I just want to talk about, but if you want to just maybe comment what I just read off here or anything.
I think that show was really good. It was well done. Mitch and Ray are two guys who are really knowledgeable in a field that we talk about tangentially, right? It's kind of at one side of, the Bitcoin mission, this idea of sovereignty, self-reliance, and of course, beef. So, it was interesting hearing those guys talk. I will say that I'll put out an APB here. If you're the listener who sent me a voice note to the show account, I think it was Sunday morning or Saturday morning, I forget, about milk. I want to talk to you because it sounds like you might have something that's worth hearing to talk about. And maybe we can work on pulling on that thread and maybe do an episode of the show, if not with you, then with someone who can help us with that. So anyway, yeah, Len, very good. And actually, I was saying to you before the show, that show also performing very well. So love to see that. Glad those guys came on. Hey, we should have them on again, right? I think we're going to have them on again pretty soon.
I'd love to bring them back on if they want to. The floor is always open for them. So anyways, MoBTC Dick also writes in, I was very curious about Bitcoin Well, but Dave is great, so I'm going to make my next few buys with them. And yeah, I would suggest if you're going to buy and you don't care about KYCing yourself, the online buy is really cheap. Check out the spreads. It's generally the cheapest out there. If you're looking for KYC free, it's really easy to use the ATMs. It may be cheaper alternatives out there, but it may be a little bit more of hurdles you have to jump through. So the ATMs also provide you a good opportunity to buy KYC free through Bitcoin Well. The Bitcoin Viking writes in, I like to hear you fired up. Good work as always, boys, because last week we were just on fire. Rander writes in, guys, you got to seriously consider moving to Alberta at some point of your future. The stories are true. There's lots of Torontonians moving here for more affordability, and they don't regret it. At the very least, plan a week-long vacation here in the Rockies and hit up Jasper, Banff, Lake Louise, and or Canmore. Those are some great places to visit. I've seen pictures. I've heard a lot of people have gone there, love it. Let's see what else we have here. Second Breakfast writes in, love hearing us. Let's let loose. So we were just on fire last week.
We were arguing. We weren't letting loose. We were arguing. We almost never disagree on something. So like there's clearly a line between us on the ledger thing last week. And that's why these guys are like letting loose. Yeah,
sure. It was fun. It was. And Norman Remnant writes in, you're both fighting the good fight. Keep on going. So yes, we are definitely are. And the last thing, Mo BTC Dick writes in once again, did you guys hear the clown show Twitter spaces between Foss and Udi? JFC, people are soft. Publord was the only one speaking any sense. Did you hear this?
I listened to some of it, but not too much. I was busy at work that day, unfortunately. I meant to go back and listen to it, but there's just too much other stuff that's taking precedent for me. So I haven't been back to listen to it. Did you hear any of it?
Yes, I did. And Foss was suckered in. He took the bait. Udy trolled him, and hook, line, and sinker, Foss just took the bait, and unfortunately, it didn't look very good on him at the end. Mm-hmm. Not only that, still nobody has called the Udy camp out for this, and I'll do it right now. I mean, at least I don't think anybody has, but if I did, my apologies if you did. The people at the Bitcoin conference paid for Udy to show up. He publicly admitted this. This is not like I got inside information. He publicly admitted this on the space. He showed up and they paid him to show up. And they paid him to go there to dance like a moron and to shit on Bitcoin, to do the death of Bitcoin dance. And he was saying that finally, after 10 years, we killed Bitcoin. This is what they're paying people to do. Imagine if you paid to go to the conference, some of the money in which you paid for those tickets was directed for somebody to dance like a fucking idiot, like somebody going to Ethereum, Ethereum conferences. And same thing is happening here. It's too bad. So sad. They have to be called out. And yeah, unfortunately, Foss, he was trolled.
Yeah. I think in our group chat, we have a couple of group chats together, but in one of them, I think I was saying that, you know, Foss is, a good Bitcoiner and gets it and brings this whole bond angle that not a lot of people understood before he showed up or were talking about before he showed up. But, you know, going on the dance floor with Udy, you know, pun intended, I guess, those guys are not, they're not fighting the same fight. And so like, there's just no point, right? There's no winning that for Greg. And, you know, maybe we'll talk to him about it. I'm sure it'll come up, at the Bitcoin conference. I think I'm moderating a panel with, him and Larry Lepard. So, you know, maybe if I can convince Larry to do the floss coming onto the stage, that could really add a little bit of spice to that, that panel. What do you think? Good idea? Bad idea?
Give it a try. Give it a try. What the? He's all over Twitter these days showing off just about anything. So
yeah.
Might be able to twist his arm, and I may not need too much twisting, but let's move on. We could talk about Bitcoin related news. Oh, actually, we have one thing we have to show off.
We got the shirts. So,
sorry, I didn't mean to jump
CBP,
the gun here.
CBP, we haven't decided what we're going to sell these for yet. I will say that if you're not going to the conference, we'll still find a way to sell them to you. These are on the way. They are heavy cotton. I think we ended up going with the American Apparel heavy cotton. So it'll be a pretty nice fit. I think these are going to look fucking sick. Honestly, I think they're going to look really good. And I'm excited to wear one the weekend of the conference. So if you're looking for one, I don't know what we're going to sell them for yet. We'll have a bunch. I think we got medium, large, and extra large. I'm pretty sure. We printed 50. We can print more if there's demand, but I don't want to have too many of the same CBP shirts floating around. I kind of like keeping it small run to manufacture scarcity. Yeah, I just think it's cooler. Like, this is a second print, right? Len, God bless him, made the first ones with like the no coiner of the week and all that stuff, which was, you know, that was a good first run. Now, my wife, who's taken more of an interest in the brand of the CBP over the last like 2-3 months, is demanding that everything we do goes through her first. So you can thank her for that. But I'm hyped on it, Len. Are you gonna be wearing one or what?
Yeah, of course. And Boomer's saying, what the heck? Those shirts have sleeves?
You can cut them off. They're removable.
There you go. With some scissors, anything is possible. But
that's right.
Let's move on, Joey. We got the Bitcoin-related news we got to dive deep into. And before we move on to the Clown World stuff, and we had some interesting news from Ledger this past week. And the previous show we had, as you mentioned earlier in the show, we had a disagreement with their approach on things. It looks like they have listened to some of the criticism. And they, number one, they have temporarily put the recovery key service on hold. And that's the service in which you pay, I believe it's $10 a month. Yeah. And Ledger would be taking the keys and splitting it up into three different shards. And it'll be sent to three different custodials to keep to manage in case you lose your keys, you could recover it later on. So that's being mothballed, at least temporarily. It may come back later on. And they are also moving towards open sourcing their software, but it's not everything is being open source. So there's a caveat here. So going back to the recovery protocol, that would be open source. So any questions to do with that, if you want to look at the code, what's in behind it, that's great.
They're moving some other stuff into the light as well, though, right? It's not just the recovery thing. There's some other stuff coming in a la cold card, I think, right? Reproducible, but not quite open source. There's a name for that. There's a name for that in between.
a source verifiable or source verified.
Right, maybe. Yeah.
So the way that I've understood this, and I could be wrong, it's they're going to open source almost everything. The operating system, most of it is going to be open source because there is some IP of manufacturers that will prevent Ledger from open sourcing some of the stuff they have there, i.e. the firmware. So with all this being said, this might be able to alleviate some people's concerns with the Ledger recovery service, where sending off the keys, splitting it off into three different pieces and sending three different custodials. But in my opinion, it still doesn't solve much because open sourcing is good, but you can still have bad open source software that doesn't.
Sure.
This is exactly a situation. So still offering this type of service, it's still not your keys, not your coin. You may still have it and they may break it up. But I wonder in the future, and this has always been discussed in the past, we discussed last week, if there's ever a government that's going to be asking for this information, they have to basically provide this. And they should provide, unless they want to make enemies with the government. So I look at this, it's step in the right direction. They should go further. They should be able to open source everything. Looks like they can't right now due to intellectual property hurdles that have to be jumped. One thing of note, they say they want to reach a similar level as the Raspberry Pi with respect to open sourcing their hardware. And Raspberry Pi, they don't have too much that is open source. So using that as the benchmark to achieve, it's setting the bar rather low, and that's too bad. This is something we should not be striving to achieve. Look for something better. There are better alternatives out there to use. Cold Card immediately comes to mind. Jade is pretty good too, although it's not truly air-gapped, because at least the way I understand it, Joey, I think you have yours. I still have mine.
I don't know where mine is.
Mine's still boxed.
We both just got one a couple weeks
ago. And it's very cheap. It was like Canadian $79, I think it was from it. So it's a good price, but it's not totally air-gapped, Jade. So I don't want to talk about Jade too much. I want to talk more about Ledger. So there are alternatives out there. Find them. Find something that works for you. Don't trust something like this because obviously they don't deserve our trust. We have verified that they are not good actors. They are stepping in the right direction, but I still have some concerns with them. Just my two sats. What are your thoughts, Joey?
I'm not going to drag this out because I need to watch Boston and Miami game 7 at 8:30. I will say this, okay? To quote the great Rodolfo Novak, Ledger is a good company, but shit happens, okay? And that is, I think, where you and me agree, that no matter what the intention, you're adding attack surface like this, you don't want it, okay? That's one problem. Now, I will say, friend of the show, Matt Odell, on Rabbit Hole Recap, if you guys listened to last week's show, said the exact same thing that I said here on Monday night last week, that the thing really to keep in mind is that the panic will cause people to make mistakes. And those mistakes are irreversible, irreparable, and oftentimes no one's fault except the person who's doing the coin movement or whatever, right? Forming the new transactions. So overall, okay, I will concede that we should be striving for better for sure. But to me, I think if you're a Ledger user and you don't want to pick a new hardware wallet just yet, there's no rush. There's no rush. Everything is fine for now. That'd be my stance. It remains my stance. But you know, Len, I think the thing to keep in mind here, and I'd be curious if they share these numbers, because Pascal was pretty quick to share how many users they had during the What Bitcoin Did interview. I want to know how many new users they pick up in the next 6 months compared to the 6 months prior. I don't know how many people they're going to get. I think that this is really going to affect their onboarding more than it does their existing user base. That's my best guess. That'll be where they see the most damage.
They offer a suite of shitcoins that they could be hosted on there. So they may not be able to drag in as many Bitcoiners. I mean, that's just, I'm guessing at that. But maybe the shitcoiners will still flock to them because there's not too many alternatives out there.
Can I even posit to you that, like, if you were, again, like, this is very much hypothetical because I don't know, besides Ledger and Trezor, let's say you weren't a total degen and the only degening you did was in, like, Ethereum Classic, I don't know, what are the other, like, mainstay alts? Like, is XRP still around? It must be, right? So,
Bitcoin,
like, let's
Cash,
see.
Maybe, I don't know.
So let's say you only dabble in like the top five. I mean, those are the top five in 2018. I don't know what they are now, but let's say you dabbled. Yeah, like let's say they're the same. Let's say nothing has changed, and there's still.
I think stable coins are like the top bunch now. I think they.
Those are other good examples, right? Is there even another wallet option besides Ledger and Trezor if you wanted to just be in those five things? Like, you might have to stay. You might really have no choice, right? Like, what else is out there that will let you store some of this stuff? I don't know. Has there been a lot of new hardware that's been, you know, found to be reputable? Keystone is one that I have a Keystone. I like it. I think that Robert Breedlove was advertising some weird ass thing like a month or two ago that he was getting pasted for on Twitter that no one had ever heard of. I keep on seeing one on my Twitter feed now, the Elipel or something like that, that looks like it might be a shitcoin mansion type thing. But if you're just dabbling in those top five and you don't want to go Bitcoin only and you don't want to go down the risk or out on the risk curves of one of these new guys, you basically have to stay, right? I think you basically have no choice but to stay in Ledger and Trezor. Unless I'm missing. I mean, maybe we're not really the guys to ask. Like, I'm not paying that much attention to those wallets, but I don't think there's been a lot of new entrants to that ecosystem, have there?
To be honest, I have no idea. I haven't followed it.
But we would. I think we would. Maybe we wouldn't know, but I think if anyone would have seen it, even in passing, it would have been you and me. I don't see anyone in the chat saying they know about any of these things. So, like, I don't know. I don't think there's any other new entrants. Like, this is it. It's basically a closed loop now, right? Between these guys and the Bitcoin-only wallets. Everything else is second place, right?
I think. Potentially. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak with any authority because I just don't know. If I have to guess even further, I would imagine people that are doing the shitcoining, especially that are dabbling into degenning, as you mentioned, maybe a hot wallet would be something, maybe MetaMask, and just they would forego the whole hardware wallet and just use something like that.
Boomer saying Casa does shitcoins now. Casa does Ethereum. I don't think they do everything else.
And I think that's what he's referencing.
Yeah. I wouldn't even, like, I'm talking, we here view that as a shitcoin, but I think Gen Pop, okay, doesn't view Ethereum as a shitcoin. So I would say you got to go even further on the degen scale before you start talking about some of the stuff that's like, anyway, I don't know, Len. To me, the hardware, if you're using that hardware, especially if it's one of the older ones, like whatever that S, is it the S or the S Plus or whatever, the one from years and years ago, the 2017-18 vintage one.
Talk about the Ledger?
Yeah, if you're using that one, like, and you're not ready to make the jump or you can't get another hardware wallet, don't lose any sleep at night, okay? It's not worth it. Take your time. Do the research. Len and I, you know, talking about a few options here. Jade, Cold Card. There are others as well. But, you know, it's a lesson learned, I think, for them, Len. The question is, how are they going to make it better next time? I'm not 100% sure. We'll find out, I guess, right?
They will, you know, once trust is lost, it's very difficult to get it back. It's not impossible, but it's definitely, it takes a long time.
One other one I've seen, TGEM in the chat, actually, I've seen this mentioned as a strong one, Bitbox. I think the Bitbox 2.0 has Bitcoin only hardware, right? I've seen this a bunch. I thought about buying one, but they're like $300, something like that, something crazy.
Yeah.
Not spending that kind of money on a hardware wallet.
Well, speaking of gaining back trust, I mean, keeping on the same story, Cold Card at one time, they had a software wallet that was online. It really didn't have good reviews and nobody really liked the product all that much. And it took many years to get to the point where they are now. Yeah. So it looks like, you know, you can develop a good product and build trust, but it takes time. It takes a lot of time and you got to stay focused and don't veer off the thing should just be
simple, right? Like if you're using Bitcoin, I would argue that holding Bitcoin is using Bitcoin. I'm one of those people. The number of times you should be going into your hardware wallet for a suite of tools related to your Bitcoin, pretty low, right? You should be getting addresses, maybe doing a little UTXO management, but generally speaking, that should be an in-only device. And if it's an in-only device, there's a couple of things like Len has mentioned many times, right, that you really can't compromise on. One is air gapping or something close. And the other, I think, is minimizing the attack surface. It's really not, you know, the list is pretty short, right? List is pretty short.
Air gaps with Sparrow or Spectre or something along those lines. And if you really want to go the extra mile, load up Tails before
you could even go Spectre harder than that, man. You can go harder. Go get like a Start 9 one of the Start 9 products and run everything, server everything in-house. It's, you know, all this stuff, again, like I said last week, and I think I don't think we disagree on this. Maybe we just didn't really touch on it as much as we could have. But the, I think the important thing is not letting perfect be the enemy of good or better. And it doesn't necessarily mean, like Len says, you shouldn't strive for better in your hardware wallet, because that's not really that big a jump, right? From the ledger to the cold card is not that big a jump. You can do that. Most people can figure that out. But don't go crazy, you know, like Luke Dasher tried to, you know, last year and end up losing a significant chunk of your change because you do your own PGP and you're storing your own, you know, doing your own encryption, storing your own keys, storing your own, all that stuff. It's a lot. Do what you can do. Do what you can, you know, handle and have a mastery of, or close to a mastery of. And just remember that the more you interact with something, the more likely you are to make a mistake. And Bitcoin, fortunately for us, you know, is a value holding tool for the moment, I think, for most of us. And it doesn't need that much interaction. It doesn't need that much attention, right? It's like a hamster. You just feed it every once in a while and that's it.
Let's move on. There's still lots to talk about. I didn't think we'll spend that much time on that Ledger story. And Trezor is actually in the news this week too. The Trezor T wallet. Now, this wallet is not cheap, $219. That's right from the Trezor website. So it's not like I'm getting a deal or anything. There could be deals to be had, but straight from the source, $219. Well, cybersecurity officials known as Unicyphered, they have found a way to hack into the Trezor T wallet. And they have to have, it's a physical hack, so they have to have the actual device in their hands in order to hack into it. So they are taking advantage of what they call unpatchable hardware vulnerability with the STM32 chip that allows us to dump the embedded flash and one-time programmable data. So if it's unpatchable hardware, if this is always going to be there, unfortunately, for Trezor T users, too bad, so sad. And to prove that they were able to do that, they actually documented the process in a video, and they were able to show off how they were able to retrieve, get this, the seed phrase and the PIN. I am unsure, based on this, if other Trezor wallets are at risk, but the Trezor T, unfortunately, based off this, if you have one, and as long as you have the physical device, you should be okay. But if it's ever lost, theoretically, somebody could take advantage, embedded flash, dump the data, and get access to your seed phrase and or PIN. So it's more wallet information. And you know what? It's more credence that we should hold on to something better and use something better, like Cold Card. But yeah. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. The thing that bothers me about this kind of stuff, and we didn't really mention this with Ledger last week, but maybe we should, you know, lump them together here for just for this, the moment. If it's not about whether or not, and Trezor obviously is making the case, and rightfully so, that, okay, if you give someone access to your physical device, the least of your concerns is whether or not they can run this exploit. Like, if they got your device, there's a lot of things that are going to probably happen next, right? Most of the time, as long as you know, are able to use the PIN or guess the PIN, the funds are not secure at that point. And the thing I just want to point out is that it's not necessarily the problem that's being discussed. It's always the biggest issue. It's that if there's a shortcoming in the hardware somewhere, or a shortcoming in the code somewhere that someone picked up on, you know, what's the likelihood that there's other shortcomings other places, or that there may be other shortcomings coming down the pipe with updates, whether it's in their user interface or in their firmware or whatever. Again, like, it's the thing is, yeah, these risks are small. I think they're very small, actually. I think it's even very small in the case of the Ledger Recover program. But the thing is, as your position size grows, it's a risk that you just don't want to and don't have to take. There's other options. It's not like, you know, you have to use a big four bank in Canada, whether or not you want to keep your money there or not. There's other options for you in the Bitcoin space. And so it's a cold card or it's whatever. Len, these guys had first mover advantage, Ledger and Trezor, and both of them in the same 10 days basically fumbled some significant portion of user trust. Again, you said, right? You can take a lifetime building up trust and lose it in a day. And it seems like both of these guys have done that, at least in some regard. Who knows exactly how bad it'll be? But, you know, Trezor is kind of doubling down. Oh, well, it's hard to do. You need the device, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, man, like this is if you think Bitcoin's going to go to $1 million, then people are going to be coming for your device. Like, it's not that hard to imagine a world where that's the case, right? So anyway, let's see what happens. Let's see which one of these guys can make it better.
I will have to say, with respect to Cold Card, if you input the pins incorrect too many times, the device is bricked.
Yeah.
So there are
There's other options too, right? But like the problem is that if they, like, I don't think there's any exploit on a Cold Card where if someone gets your device, they can run a piece of software to extract the pin. But it seems like these other devices have that problem, which is an issue.
And I want to add to with the Cold Card itself, typically when researchers pick this apart, open it up and try to extract data, it tends to brick itself too. So it's seems to be, based on everything I've been reading and hearing, it is a very safe device and nobody has been able to, it's tamper proof, at least from what I understand, which you know, they don't sponsor us. They don't give us anything. I'm just talking based on what So if you do value your Bitcoin and holding on to it, consider something like Cold
Card. We're not the only ones, right? Like Odell and others speak openly about how Cold Card is best in class. I think 1031 sponsors supports Cold Card. They're partners in some respects, vis-a-vis venture funding. So, I mean, you make of this what you will. Ultimately, everything in Bitcoin and more broadly in life, if you want to get really cosmic, is DYOR and find out for yourself and all these things. So take your time, make a good decision, and do something that makes sense for you, right? And whether it's your security setup or your device or whatever, you know, everyone's got different needs. You know, you could be someone who's got, you know, dexterity problems or something, for all I know, and you maybe can't punch the numbers. You need something else. You got to figure out what's right for you. It's, at the end of the day, it's your Bitcoin, your money, your future, and it's up to you to secure it.
Have you heard about this ARK thing?
I've not heard much about it. I've heard some about it. I'd like to hear more. We talked about it a bit on the Friday Spaces, actually, but I haven't looked more into it.
It was announced at the Bitcoin conference, and I wanted to talk a little bit about it last week, but we went too long on so many topics, but we can't miss it this week. And I'm going to give a very brief overview of it because it's still relatively new and I'm learning the whole thing. It's a layer two protocol a la Lightning, and it's for cheap, anonymous, off-chain Bitcoin payments a la Lightning. So there's a lot of comparables here. They claim it to be private. When sending money or sending any Bitcoin, it's easy as sending as on-chain. So if you know how to send on-chain transactions, the same thing with this ARK. And there's no inbound or outbound liquidity management. And that is something that is an Achilles heel for people running a Lightning node. And as for the cost for sending anything, well, it's as cheap as Lightning. So this thing is checking off a lot of boxes here. And in the past, I even said, I know I said this privately to you in one dinner we had with UI and the two Marks, that Lightning may be just a stepping stone to something better. And this may be to something better. I don't know, but Lightning could be the be all and end all anyways. So Lightning does fail too in certain regards. Sometimes the payments, they do fail. When you try sending it out, it just doesn't go through. It doesn't find a route. Although these are happening less and less these days. More and more, it's just the success rate is higher. But nonetheless, the guy behind it, his name is Burak. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. And he was actually, how he stumbled upon this is rather ingenious. He was working on a new Lightning node wallet, Lightning Network wallet. So he was trying to work within the Lightning Network. But the project for his wallet on the Lightning Network, it morphed into something else. And it morphed into this layer two protocol. And its design has been optimized after several months of use and testing with his inner circle. So when he came across this and developed it, he still took some time in order to optimize it and make it usable for the greater public. And it says here, quote, ARK enables anonymous, scalable, off-chain payments through an untrusted intermediary called the ARK Service Provider, ASP. ASPs are always on servers that provide liquidity to the network, similar to how Lightning service workers provide. So, end quote. So they are going to be providing the liquidity, and you don't have to do any of the management for that. That's a huge burden that's taken off people's shoulders here. He also mentions there is no double spend issues. Very big. Users self-custody and can exit to the base layer anytime. Seems pretty good. Get this, the ARK has UTXO sets that live off the chain. These UTXOs are referred to as virtual UTXOs or VTXOs. In short, existing virtual UTXOs are destroyed and new virtual UTXOs are created in an ongoing basis, similar to how on-chain funding flows. So this is going to create a sense of, or not sense, a lot of privacy, because if the existing virtual UTXOs are destroyed, well, that information is lost. The payments are settled every 5 seconds. And you could do also zero confirmation transactions. So you don't even have to wait the 5 seconds to do it. But 5 seconds is rather fast. And every payment on a protocol takes place in a coin join round. A lot of things here are checked off here, makes it really interesting. I want to take a look at this. I would love to just see what it's all about. I haven't yet to date. This seems rather promising, but remember, this is all very new. So be very careful if you do anything with your Bitcoin. With this, it could potentially be lost.
There's Lightning OGs, as much as there can be Lightning OGs, still talking about the experimental nature of that layer two and talking about channels still force closing. Like you mentioned, there are problems with sending sats, problems with transactions, problems with connectivity, channel balancing, liquidity balancing, all that stuff. It's a hurdle that no normie is ever going to take. You know, you have a Lightning channel. I think the show had a Lightning channel for a bit, and it was hard to maintain, I believe. And, you know, that's you doing it. You have a knack and a passion for doing stuff like that. And still it's difficult, right? It becomes more of a project than it's worth in a lot of cases. And there's no money in it. There's no, you know, clout in it, anything like that. You're doing it to support the network. And a lot of people won't do that. Now this thing, there's a lot of perks here. The lack of channel balancing is huge. You don't need that. And it seems to me that, again, as we move toward the next phase of the sovereign individual thesis, we're going to need more friendly, user-friendly privacy interfaces. And I'll be damned if this isn't a great one. Everything going through CoinJoin is incredible. The basically fee-free nature of the Arc integration is great. I want to talk to this kid at some point. I don't know how, he's probably very busy and probably has a lot of people knocking on his door, but I'd like to talk to him just because I want to know like why, what's the best way to phrase this? I want to know why he ended up going this direction instead of trying to build something on Lightning. You know, this is not an easy thing to do, right? He's basically asking a lot of people to abandon the L2 du jour in favor of whatever this ends up being, right? Difficult ask, but it sounds like he thinks he's got the chops to make it happen. Do you think, okay, honest question here, maybe a little bit dark, but like this guy to me also great candidate for international arrest and detainment if this thing really is as good as it sounds, because this is going to be very difficult to slow down by modern governments.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. So hopefully
it almost sounds too good to be true. Right? The track. Like the stuff you're saying, like it's crazy. The coin joins, 5 second transaction settlement, node balancing, everything is basically it's done for you. It sounds like. So, what's the catch? Is there a catch? I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Yeah. Well, he talked about it. There's an article in which he came to the aha moment for this, and I don't want to rhyme it off because I'm going to do a poor job at doing so. But I'll send it out to anybody who's asking for it because it's very long, but he outlines his process from where he was working on the Lightning Network wallet to where he founded this new protocol. And it's rather interesting. And yeah, hopefully nothing happens to him because we need people.
Boomer noting in the chat that he's done some other white hat stuff in the past too. So it's not his first foray into the Bitcoin ecosystem. Glad to see that. That's important. Yep. Guy who cares about the success of the token and the ecosystem as much as he does his own clout. You gotta love it.
Well, moving on. There's now something that you could do with Lightning. We were just talking about it, but let's talk a little more about Lightning. Lightning and Liquid BTC. And Liquid is, you know, obviously it's tied more to the Jade. And you can now do atomic swaps between Lightning and Liquid. And this is with a company called Bolts. And as I mentioned, not many wallets support Liquid BTC. I think Jade might be the only one, but I could be wrong. And this whole atomic swap deal between Lightning and Liquid, it enables people to do, it's a cheap way of rebalancing Lightning channels. Not only that, Liquid Bitcoin, in my opinion, it's a good way to get on board if to buy Bitcoin. I know you're not buying Bitcoin per se, but liquid Bitcoin, if there's high transaction fees, using Bull, you could buy liquid. And then by doing so, you have bought Bitcoin equivalent. And once the transaction fees get lower, then you could move it around either to Lightning or to the on-chain Bitcoin. So yeah. Liquid has a use. I understand that it's, you know, people would say it may be a shitcoin, but it's a sidechain. So it does have some value. So if you want to use it at times during high network fees, it does work. I took a look now at the Lightning Liquid Atomic Swaps website. It's liquid.boltz, B-O-L-T-Z, dot exchange. And it's a rather cool look. Like, the UX is phenomenal. And yeah, in terms of the fees you pay, I took a look at it earlier today, and a little bit over 10,000 sats, 10,400 sats of Liquid got me 10,000 sats of Lightning. So it was around a 4.5% fee to move from one to the other, which was kind of high, but that fee goes down the more you put in. When I entered 1,000,000 sats, the exchange was 0.3%. That's the charge. So amazing. The more you put in, it's really good. And since this is an atomic swap, there's no custody of sats that is done. Really cool. I'm not suggesting do this, but if you have a Jade like Joey and I do, and if there are times of high network fees, you may want to consider, if you're buying through Bull, and you can still do this with the $999 at the Canada Post thing, do that. And then once the fees come down, then you can move the Liquid to on-chain or to Lightning, depending on what's your flavor, and you could then run from there. So I like this. It's giving people more options that are available to them, and pick and choose whatever you want. I like this, and it's really cool. So liquid.boltz, B-O-L-T-Z dot exchange. Check it out.
Yeah, it sounds great, man. You know, one of the things that I really like about the Jade, again, I feel like we're talking about a lot of wallets today, but it's not even just the Jade, okay? The last two stories are important because they're exemplary of what happens in Bitcoin. And I'm not necessarily saying that both of these are a result of the Ordinals inscription stuff, okay? But where did Casey Rodimer go after doing a month of press, media, and all kinds of other stuff because of his, you know, Ordinals inscriptions invention? What I see now is they've basically become a separate part of the Bitcoin ecosystem, these guys who care about that kind of stuff. And other people who are interested in this thing becoming global money have built basically route arounds for the fees. People don't want to pay fees. They want to do L2 settlements. They want to use ARC. They want to use Liquid. Sorry, what was the name of that token? Every time you say Liquid, I think LCAD on Bull, but it's not that. It's oh my God, what is the name of that token? Liquid Bitcoin, is that what it is? LBTC?
LBTC, yeah.
Liquid. LBTC, yeah, yeah. So there's all kinds of route arounds coming, and they're coming faster and faster and faster, because at the end of the day, again, like we talked about this before. I don't want to rehash this, but I'll just, you know, sum it up quick. This has to be global money for anything else to work. So if you want to send JPEGs, the JPEGs have value, all that stuff, fine. But it's got to be global money first. If you want to, you know, put information on the blockchain, you want to put PDFs, you want to put contracts, all this stuff, fine. But it's got to be global money first. Because there's other better ways to do that besides Bitcoin and a blockchain application that's slow, inefficient, but final, very, very much final. So let's see. I'm happy to, you know, participate in that when I can, because, you know, I'm buying on Bull now. So I want to see what that ecosystem looks like and how difficult it is. Like you mentioned, if you give the website one more time, people can go check out that user interface. It's really a lot cleaner than you're expecting. I guarantee it. Even if you've been in Bitcoin a while and think that maybe some of the stuff has been cleaned up, it looks pretty sleek. And like you mentioned there, the importance of the atomic swap can't be understated, because it's a cleaner way to transact this way. You may remember in 2017, 18, so I was around that time, when atomic swaps first started to become on vogue. Everyone was talking about, tokens and all this.
Mostly was between Bitcoin and Monero. That's the one.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah.
There was some other ones that kind of came up, right? Everyone was talking about how they're going to do it. They're going to do it. Well, looks like we got an option here if you're interested. So I like it, man. It's never been, again, like I feel like this show, sometimes we get doom and gloomy, but a lot of bullish stories this week, a lot of bullish news. the hardware companies backing down on services that are going to negatively impact their users, people building around layer twos that are going to make it easier for everyday users of Bitcoin to, you know, grow the circular economy. What's not to like? It's a good week to be a Bitcoiner.
And the P-Man Van is saying that he had some issues with their customer service from Bull Bitcoin. And he said it was all KYC anyways. If you want some more information about that, I did a video on it's not the case about being KYC. It's KYC free if you do it right. And if you want a little bit more depth into that and in-depth information into that, feel free to reach out to me. I'll be happy to share with you my experience or to guide you through the process, because it is definitely KYC free if you do it.
The tools are out there and they're free. You can do it all for free. KYC free with all tools that cost $0. So yeah, weird that you say that. I've heard the same thing Boomer's heard. Their support's been really good, but I've not needed the support, so I can't comment on that firsthand.
I've used it a few times and I could say that it's wonderful. I don't want to say why I've used it, but it's been just no issues whatsoever.
Great. On my end.
Anyways, a few more stories I want to talk about. Nexo. We've heard about them in the past, and this was a company we've thought it was going to fall last year when all these other exchanges fell, and this one for whatever reason has survived. Well, a Reddit user by the name of Pletador, and he's been great. Like, I wasn't just following him because he's been dynamite lately with the information he's providing. He notes that the APY that they're offering on stablecoins is shooting up, and that's a huge red flag. USDT, in fact, if you want to lock it in for 3 months fixed terms, I can't believe you can actually lock in stuff like USDT and stuff like that. Get this, they're going to offer you APYs of 16, as high as 16%. So that alone goes to show you that there's
something. Tell me if you've seen this one before, eh?
Yes. So there, it sounds like, I mean, I could be wrong. It's just the perception of liquidity issues. Going through this, just be very careful. You're asking to get rugged. And if you're locking it in, you'll never be able to get it out. You're just going to be one of the creditors in the end, and you're going to get pennies in the dollar. So you Nexo users out there, be careful. You could be next to be rugged.
If you want to see your future, just head over to the BlockFi subreddit and turn back to like the 10-month-old posts and let me know if anything looks familiar there. You can see your future already, Anon.
Celsius, too. They might be coming back. Remember that one. They're going to be... They might be trying to restart the company, and it looks like they're going to be attempting to do so after the auction for their assets wraps up. And a company by the name of Fahrenheit LLC, they're going to be the ones that are going to be running the show, and they're going to be providing the capital. It looks like it may be Celsius in name only. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, if they're going to offer any DeFi-related products or anything related to that. I do not know, but... Again, we talked about trust earlier in the show. Once you lose it, it's very difficult to regain it. And I can't believe anybody would consider using this. They should change the name. Make it Fahrenheit, not Celsius. I don't know. Just anything else. Kelvin. Even Kelvin, man. But I don't know. It seems like a bad idea to me. But what do I know?
This is a fool me once, shame on me type situation, right? Like, I don't understand how you can wind up in this situation. Not two, but not three, not four times, right? How many more rugs have to happen? You had the original Celsius, BlockFi, FTX, and now you're going to go back to Celsius under new management? Like, all they got to do is put under new management on the front door and you're right back in there. 16%, 3-month lock-in.
Like, we learn from our mistakes. That's our motto. The last Bitcoin-related story I have is IRS-CI, that's a criminal investigations. They are going to be deploying 4 cyber attaches to locations abroad to combat cyber crime. And they're going to be sending these people abroad to fight peer-to-peer mixing DeFi and crypto crimes. This is from the IRS. And where are they going to be sending them? Well, Bogota, Frankfurt, Sydney, and Singapore. I guess the Singapore dollar must have caught their attention. This is a pilot project, so this is something that pilot they can scale it out. This is going to combat cyber crime, focusing on tax and financial crimes that use cryptocurrency, decentralized finance, peer-to-peer payments, and mixing services. I have nothing else to say. I just saw this. I laughed, and this is from an official press release from the U.S. government. It was pretty funny, but yeah, I'll leave it at that.
What does a you know, one of these outposts look like abroad? Four, you know, non-domestic outposts fighting peer-to-peer mixing. So what are they going to do? They're putting up, you know, local Kijiji ads, other places. Hey, you want to come mix coins with me? Like, okay, bro, come on. Like, no one is that dumb in this. Like, no one is that dumb in this space. There's a lot of people who will send you one BTC and hope to get one back or two back. But I don't think a lot of people are showing up to the park with their, you know, cold card and their laptop looking for a coin join partner. Also, that's not how it works. Like, coin joins take a while, man. It's not just like a quick, let's have a coffee together and off we go. Type thing. So I don't know. Again, like, how much of this is just theater? You know, is this
100%?
Gotta be, right? Like, no one can actually do this.
They threw darts on the globe and they figured, okay,
where are the outposts? Cambodia?
No, Bogota, Frankfurt, Sydney, and Singapore. Those are the four. Okay. So they're going to be, I'm assuming, stationed at their missions abroad and going from there. I don't have a clue, man. This nice. I thought it was just funny, and this is at a time where they're trying to cut back on spending. But
God, that's bless them.
A good segue to the next thing, because we could talk about Clown World News. And the only thing I want to talk about Clown World News really is focusing more on the debt ceiling. And I'll be kind of quick on this one. I don't want to spend too much time. I'll let you go on nuts on it. Looks like the whole debt ceiling thing has been temporarily resolved, and it's always temporarily resolved. This thing is never permanently resolved. And the summary, this is what I've been reading. And I could be wrong, because this is, for me, it's political theater. I didn't really care about it too much. They're going to be raising the debt ceiling for 2 years, approximately 2 years. They're going to be cutting spending by $50 billion, and $10 billion of new IRS funding is going to be clawed back. And there's going to be no budget caps after 2025, no new taxes or government programs. This includes the proposed 30% tax on Bitcoin miners that Biden was talking about some time ago. So that's something that's interesting. Boost in defense and VA spending, and domestic program spending will be frozen for 1 year. And so that $50 billion, it's really just a drop in a bucket. And this is a literal drop in a bucket if you think about how much money they spend in a given year. That's going to be fuck all. And one thing of note is that young people, they're going to get fucked, because, well, majority of young people, because student loan programs, the payment, repayment is going to be coming back into effect. The pause is now going to be gone, according to this thing. And the young people that were living it up, I don't really say living, that's the wrong way to say it. They were adapting to a higher priced world, because everything is more expensive. It always is, but it's way more expensive than it was a few years ago. And I'm sure that people's salaries aren't matching what the rate of the actual inflation is. So these young people now have to take on the burden of paying back the loan that they took. Now, I don't want to go down the argument, should they be paying it back? They should, but is this the time? I don't know, but they will have less discretionary income as of this, because they have now the money they have is going to have to be paid towards the student loan. That's going to make the federal government more money, but these students, unfortunately, they're going to have to pay up and do this. Now, this environment, you can see too much money is being spent, not enough money is coming in, something is going to happen. And I got a couple of stories I just want to even tack onto this. We never learned from this, from 2008, in fact. There's a company called Rocket Mortgage. They're going to be rolling out conventional 1% down loan programs. So you just put down 1% to get a home. Where do we heard this shit before, right? And they say that all you have to do is put 1%, and the remaining 2%, which is required to meet conventional loans, they're going to cover. So we are going down this path. Too much money going out, not enough money coming in. People are being offered homes for fucking, like, not nothing, but they're giving offered to buy homes down right away. And something is going to give. When you lose your job, you're going to have to sell the home. When the price of the home goes down, you're going to want to sell the home. We never fucking learn. Every time we do something like this, the bill that comes in that the taxpayers have to foothold, it's higher. $800 billion, I think, was the last time we had to spend collectively in 2008. Add another zero and change the first number. But we're talking trillions, or maybe tens of trillions, that is going to be needed to spend to fix these problems. And every time we do this, it's just you're going to add another zero and change the front number. This whole debt ceiling thing, it's just political theater. it was never going to come to a point where they were going to default. Never, ever. They would never have done this. So everybody is patting themselves on the back. Job well done. We did something right. Everybody wins. No, everybody fucking loses. It's just the people that are there in charge that are trying to buy for our votes. They're the ones that win.
What we talk about this. We talk about this all the time. Like, governments are in a place now where they have too much debt. That's all there is to it. They're, you know, this idea that they're, like you said, kicking the can down the road. There's not going to be a budget limit going forward. We're not going to talk about this for 2 years. We're going to start clawing back spending. $50 billion. $50 billion is a huge number to people who aren't paying attention, but to anyone who's looking at the actual data, both in terms of inflation and in terms of expected expenditures. Based around demographics, for example, $50 billion is nothing. It's a drop and a drop and a drop in the bucket. It's
cleaning the toilets. That's what you need to people.
It may as well be zero, right? It's a rounding error. And it's funny that no one realizes this. Kevin McCarthy gets on TV with some low IQ Sunday morning host, and you know they trade high fives, and then the Democratic senator from God knows what flyover state are talking to each other, and congratulations, we got what we wanted, they got a little bit, we gave a little bit, blah blah blah, it's a party, right? It doesn't work long term. I have said many times, and we've talked about this many times, and we've quoted our finance minister talking about this a few times as well. The next step is the idea that your savings are going to be used to bail in government expenditures. It's 100% going to happen. I was listening to Looney Hour over the weekend, and I can't remember. It was the UK finance minister who basically said that he's not ruling out that in the future, people who are investing in their pension, so your RSP or equivalent in the UK, they will choose which equities and which securities and which assets you can buy in your pension. That's a bail-in. That's these guys need you to buy their debt. They need you to buy certain stocks. They need you to buy certain securities. That's a total joke, man. So if they start doing that, you know, what are the odds it's going to come here at some point? The debt ceiling, sort of broadly speaking, is, you know, it's mentioned in the sovereign individual. I got to say it. Okay. Drink every time I say it. It's mentioned in there that these debts are meaningless now. They're completely insurmountable. Even to an economy the size of America, it cannot be outrun. So what's the plan? To me, I'm looking across the sort of the landscape, and I see that every dollar I have, and I tweeted this today or yesterday, every dollar I'm trying to save, the government's trying to find a way to take it from me, whether it's in my house, whether it's in my RSP, whether it's in my tax returns, whether it's in my gas or my heat, or my what, like everything I do, I got to give more money to the government to feed this machine that, you know, whether I think it's working for me or not. The fact of the matter is that it's not about whether or not I agree politically with the powers that be. The fact of the matter is that anyone with a working mind can see that there is no escape route where more tax fixes the problem. It just doesn't. So this idea that we're going to keep spinning our wheels and taking money from the productive class in the name of supporting a flywheel that has a clear end, you know, whether it's in 5 years or 10 years or 5 months or 10 months, is ridiculous. We need a better solution than that. I think that probably there isn't one in the fiat world. As Jeff Booth would say, it's hard to solve these problems from inside the world where the problems have been caused and where they've originated. So you need outside money, like Arthur Hayes would say. And the outside money is Bitcoin, period. I used to think it was real estate, and I still think there might be a role for real estate to play. I'd be curious about what the Karadzas have to say about that. That's another panel I'll be moderating in June. The Karadzas and Daniel Foch, I think his last name is, from the Real Estate Investor Podcast. You know, how outside the system is real estate at this point? How outside the system is your primary residence? How outside the system is your retirement savings? If you can't choose what your retirement savings are invested in, Len, I mean, what are we talking about? What is the, you know, is that the straw that breaks the camel's back? It's not even like, and Dicker said this on Looney Hour. It's not like the guy who's saying that in the UK is like some backbencher. It's the finance minister saying this. Like, this should raise alarm bells for people. Is it that people have no retirement savings and so they don't care, or is it that people are not paying attention so they don't know? You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's going to hit them like a ton of bricks at some point. And it's ugly, man. The way things are going is ugly, and everyone can see where this ends. And my question for, you know, any government official here or abroad would be, why pretend like additional taxes or additional, you know, walled gardens in terms of capital allocation or capital, capital protection, capital, entrenchment. Why pretend this is going to fix the problem? It's not. The problem has gotten away from you. The bus has left the station, as you say, right? So, why pretend? In my view, I would prefer to spend some of my money not pretending and be in Bitcoin with as much of it as I can day to day. I think that's the answer for most people.
And so I'm going to talk a few things that you mentioned there. So real estate, it's a good investment for people that are in Canada up to today. And it still may be a good investment moving forward. But as you mentioned, the finance minister in the UK, but also our finance minister has talked about taking your savings. And we can even include the home as something people may consider as
their savings. It is. You're right. That's a good point.
And if you can't secure it, like you can Bitcoin, it's a shitcoin. So anything along those lines, your TFSA, your RSP, your 401k, anything that you can't definitively take with you, it's a shitcoin. And we see this all around us that people are taking away people's property for whatever reason, and they could justify it. And we see the writing on a wall. It will eventually happen on a grander scale. Prepare yourself. So when it does happen, you are not one of the people that are sideswiped from all this and get totally rug pulled. Make sure you have a good stack of Bitcoin. It's secure and the world is your oyster. You could then move around and you have a lot more flexibility and freedom. Now, yeah. I just wanted to say one thing too. One thing I believe that governments will do in the United States and Canada, they'll start selling off some of their assets as a way to try to make ends meet. This is probably the last thing before the whole thing collapses. Now, in Ontario, some 25 years ago, and this is going back in time, the Tory government, they leased out the 407. That's a highway that runs just north of Toronto, east to west, or Toronto area, sorry. And it was a 99-year lease. They gave
you
it
should,
out.
You should specify why the 407 is unique for people who are listening outside of Ontario, are many.
It's a toll highway. At the time, it was the only one in Ontario. There may be more. There is one more, from what I understand. And so it was supposed to alleviate pressure off the major artery of the 401. 401 is just a disaster. The 407 was going to create a way for some of the overflow to go into the 407. So it would make traveling through Toronto and the greater Toronto area much easier. Now, they decided to lease it out for 99 years, built but with taxpayers' dollars and leased out for 99 years. Now, it was leased out just before the election. They could use that money, and they did use that money to balance the budget to help them get reelected as one of their talking points. They did get reelected. Now, that thing, that 99-year lease of that 407 contained a clause that the government cannot build any competing highways. So they essentially have a monopoly on a 407, and they're making money hand over fist. Now, the CPP, I think, owns a small portion of the 407, so at least there's something that we're getting collectively, but it really was just a huge loss in the end. Another thing that I want to say, in the United States, Chicago, and I learned this just this past week, they sold off their, at least the rights to the parking meters in the city. And they did so, and it was
to Saudi Arabia, right? I think
UAE.
Yeah.
UAE. So they ended up getting it for $1.1 billion, and it was 36,000 parking meters in Chicago. And they already made $1.6 billion dollars from it, and they still have another 61 years left on that whole thing. So I think that's what's going to happen, is they're going to start selling off assets and thinking it's a good thing and it's going to make them quick money and they don't have to deal with upkeep and all that, but really in the end it's going to cost everybody much, much more. And that's late stage fiat, so we'll see what happens with
it's that. Insane, man. How Len, the idea that you have no money in Bitcoin watching this thing kind of collapse slowly in front of you is mind numbing. It's mind numbing. You got to convince people. Like I was at a birthday party Saturday. My beer league quarterback, actually who's my cousin as well, turned 50, and him and his wife celebrated their 50th birthdays together. They have the same birthday and it's their 25th wedding anniversary. So I gave them a keg gift card or something. And I also threw $50 on an open dime for them. you gotta spread the message, man. Get people. I was showing people the open dime at the party. Like, this is Bitcoin on a thumb drive. It's because people don't know. They don't understand. And you plant the seed, right? It's about touch points. And that's one thing we got to do more of, I think, in our day-to-day lives, no matter how busy we are. And believe me, you know, I know people get busy. Remind people that, you know, there's other stuff going on out there that's maybe just a little bit out of their window of vision that's going to affect them negatively when it does enter their window of vision and start affecting them day to day. It's wild, man. Absolutely wild.
Well, let's move the clown world north. And unless you want to talk anything else about clown world news.
No. That ceiling is really, you know, dominating the news. It is a nice sort of, you know, it's the embodiment of a lot of different clown world segments we've done over the last few months. It's a great way to cut it today.
So clown world north, it looks like for people up there, it's getting tough and it's going to continually get more difficult up there. The CMHC deputy chief economist came out and he said that Canada has the highest household debt in the G7. And the reason for this is because of one of the reasons is rising home prices. And that's one of the major contributors for this. So the household debt made up 80% of the size of the overall economy back in 2008. It rose to 95% in 2010, and it exceeded the size of the economy in 2021. So it's now eclipsed the GDP for Canada as of 2021, and it probably same thing for 2022 and 2023. And mortgages make up about 3/4 of the household debt in Canada. So that's the majority of the debt is from mortgages. Accelerate. Absolutely. That's a lot of eggs in one basket. And if it does fall, which it could happen at any time, there's no fail-safe because you're dealing with this one basket of eggs that is full of mortgages. And
it's not. Can I just mention here before I forget? Yeah. It's not going to fall because as of last year, this year, I think actually would be the final year, either this year or next year. There's basically three countries where India, and I'm picking on India because this is a program specific to Indian exchange students. There's three countries where Indian students can go and bring their families if they graduate from I believe a post-secondary institution in the receiving country. So right now, the UK, Australia, and Canada allow this to happen, where if a kid comes over, graduates, he can bring his whole family over, right? Adds pressure to all the things you were just mentioning there. The household debt goes up, the cost of homes goes up, all that stuff just continues to spiral upwards, maybe by design, I don't know. The UK is halting that program next year. So that means that there's only going to be two countries where this is allowable. And I would guess that we have a way bigger Indian population here than Australia does. And so we will be the more inviting of the two countries. What's going to happen to the price of homes when we get all that extra pressure? You tell me. Everyone knows what's going to happen. It's a disaster waiting to happen here. Only a matter of time.
Yeah, but it will not go up forever, Joey. Exactly. And nothing goes up forever. Exactly.
You're right. With a long enough... The crash becomes more spectacular the longer we allow the pressure to continue to build.
Yeah. And this whole thing now that our economy is very much tied to the housing market, it just... leads to believe if the housing market does collapse in one way, shape, or form, then our economy is going to suffer greatly as a result. Yeah. Now, in comparison to other G7 countries, the household debt in the US, for instance, it fell from 100% of their GDP in 2008 to about 75% in 2021. So it's declining over that 13-year period. Ours went up. Germany and UK also experienced a decline as well during that time span. Italy, on the other hand, was flat. They didn't go up like we did. They were flat. So in comparison to our peers, the G7 country peers, we are doing worse with this metric. So it goes to show you that, and as I mentioned earlier, that if and when the housing market does collapse, there is going to be no escaping the ruins from it. There's nothing that can be done. There's no bailout big enough to save this. It's going to just be a lot of pain for a lot of people. And just prep yourself for this.
I'll tell you what's going to happen in the short term. There will be a program where the government will buy equity from your home because boomers will need that to retire. They absolutely must be able to use equity in their home to retire. And so the government will run a program where they will buy equity from you at some small, you know, in small increments as you need it, you know, whether it's $1,000 a month, $1,000 every 6 months, whatever it is. Because these are the things that have to happen in order for people not to hit the streets, basically. It's gonna be so sad to see people who spent their whole lives building up these, you know, what they thought were safety vehicles to retire on, led by, you know, financial management teams who are incompetent, only successful when the printer is running, and otherwise the victim of market conditions, as we like to say here. It's just the blind leading the blind. Everyone knows this is going to end, like you said, in this sort of a spectacular explosion, implosion, I guess, in the housing market. And we're a one-trick pony. Everyone talks about this. The best part about all this housing stuff in Canada is that literally every competent person talks about how Canada is a one-trick pony. Doesn't matter where you are politically, doesn't matter where you are in terms of, you know, MMT, or whether you're a Bitcoiner or not, whether you have a real estate portfolio, whether you are you know, domiciled here or domiciled somewhere else, whether you work in finance, whether you work in tech, whether you work in real estate. Everyone knows this country's a one-trick pony when it comes to what's driving the economy. It's housing. And you know, it's going to be incredible. And there's going to be weird stuff coming out when that happens. Well, we need to protect our seniors. We're going to start this program. Who knows what it'll be? Or the government will facilitate the incremental transfer of homes from one generation to the next via some other program. Who knows, man? But this idea that, like, there's not going to be more taxes, for example, on everything you do, whether it's sale, your primary residence, whatever, they'll need the money. They'll need the influx of liquidity, and they'll get it somehow, or try to get it somehow from you and me, which is the worst part about all this.
And I guess that's it, but I do have one other thing I want to bring to our attention here. We got a question from somebody by the name of Mark C. And I'm going to pose this to everybody out there, because I don't really have the answer to this. And this is a gentleman. He's a retired gentleman in his 60s, and he listens to our podcast. And he's been buying Bitcoin since September 2020. So that's how long he's been in this.
Good for him.
So considering his age and how long he's been buying into Bitcoin, he is not in it for the extreme long term, obviously. So he sees that he's realistic in his approach. And because he is retired, at one point he's saying that he's going to want to start cashing out and start DCAing out, in fact. And once the time is right, once he deems it right. He's wondering, though, for as a Canadian, are there any friendly off-ramps or banks in Canada that he could use? I don't know of any, because I have never sold anything. And if anybody, you, Joey, or anybody, our listeners, please pipe up, because I'd like to let him know, because he wants to know any experience about pertaining to off-ramps and crypto-friendly banks, if there is such a thing, because he will be doing this when the time is right and he wants to take advantage of it. So do you have any experience from selling Bitcoin? And if so,
Bills,
what has been your
Bills experience? Connor in the chat saying Bills. I think Bitcoin Well has a similar product where you can pay some of your bills with Bitcoin, which may help in the way that you're hoping for, Mark. The other question I have is,
and Bills, why is not BYLLS? Just
BYLLS. So it's a bull Bitcoin product, which we're somewhat familiar with. People in the chat, yeah, a lot of people saying that. Can I suggest here, at the risk of sounding shitcoiny, that the better option for Mark, if he's got a second income stream during his retirement, whether it's CPP or maybe a pension that he's contributed to, using a small amount of Bitcoin as collateral for CAD liquidity, assuming the price continues to rise with some predictability every 4 years or 5 years, is that a better option for him if he's got a second way, like, in just not selling? Maybe.
Well, he says he wants to sell and maybe swap it even for stable coins. That's his ultimate. This okay. is for, and it kind of makes sense. I can understand where he stands.
Yeah, I get it.
He's got,
yeah.
And somebody mentioned in the chat that was a Desjardins, it was with no issues. Somebody uses Desjardins and sells with no problems. So that's a bank within Canada that somebody has mentioned in the chat at work. So I have no first-hand experience.
I've never sold either. I haven't sold anything in like 5 years. I think the last time I sold was in like 2018.
So sorry, Mark. I wish I could give you a little bit more information. And I tried picking everybody's brain here, but that's all we have. Try Bills and Yeah, Desjardins seems to be an okay place.
Desjardins a bank that you can, so you'd have to sell on an exchange still and get your money out from an exchange like ShakePay or Bull or whatever into a bank account. Desjardins,
yeah.
TD did it for me years ago. I don't know if they'd still do it now.
He says he's got accounts and he mentioned all the different exchanges. I don't want to name them off in case I'll be.
Yeah, or P2P selling. Boomer makes a good point there. P2P selling also a good potential off ramp for you. If you go to a meetup or something. I don't vouch for the people who are at meetups all the time, but certainly if they're in this chat, they're probably, you know, at least somewhat respectable. Yeah, or maybe not.
Just a heads up, don't go to me for any P2P stuff. I'm definitely not gonna take I'm buying, but I'm getting it from the
usual sources. I have one more ask before we wrap up here.
Yeah, go ahead.
CoinKite is going to give away a nice bunch of gifts at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, but Celia wants us to come up with a good challenge, a good game, a good something to give away, stuff like block clocks and potentially other stuff as well. So I'm going to outsource it because I have no bandwidth for that at the moment. And the conference is about 3 weeks away. And so if you have an idea, hit me up. I'm going to tweet it too. And I'll see if we can't convince CoinKite and maybe Celia specifically that we have a good idea for a challenge and we can give some stuff away. I'll also mention there's some other great giveaways at the conference that are planned. So look out for that. I had like an hour long meeting today, Len, with Dan and another fella whose name I won't share because I don't know if anyone even knows that he's involved, but
okay.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about planning this stuff and making sure everything goes off without a hitch. It is going to be a great conference. I think people are going to have a lot of fun. I think it's going to be something that makes you think. I think it's going to be something that reminds you how important this is. And I think that it's going to be something that you'll be thinking about for a long time. It's our chance to make history, man. First one ever. So
no dancing, no shitting on Bitcoin.
No dancing, but I'll tell you, I'm going to be hungover on the second day. I'll tell you that much, but they said that's okay.
You know what? Just the fact there's going to be no dancing and garbage like that. It's not on stage.
They'll be I'm sure. Yeah. I am planning on going to a bar at least one night and cutting a rug. And
that's fine.
Dozens of beers.
That's fine. I just don't want to see it done on stage and somebody paid to fucking do that. That's where I fucking have an issue. And I will never forget that. But
don't worry about that. Do you have a Bitcoiner, no coiner or no?
No,
I don't either. But I'll say this. Okay. I need everyone in the chat to send positive vibes to Jimmy Butler, the Miami Heat tonight. He'll be trying to make sure he's not part of the most embarrassing 3-0 comeback in probably all of pro sports history, given the way that those guys have been talking. So I'll be rooting for the Heat tonight. Let's go to the after show here, then. We didn't give the price of Bitcoin at the beginning of the show, by the way.
We didn't. Yeah.
No. Jordab in the chat mentioned that. I totally forgot. But we'll give it right now. The price of Bitcoin right now is $27,760. Nice little pump over the weekend. Always a good time to buy. Price doesn't matter. It's a secondary thing. What about in Canadian dollars?
37,708. We got over 40,000, didn't we, in the past little while?
We were up at 28.3 or something like that yesterday night, but it dropped back down.
Weren't we into the 30s about a month ago, a month and a half ago? We had a really big pump. And considering where we were in November of last year,
15.
Yeah. So it's been
Bitcoin's performing well. It's no Nvidia, but it's performing well. So
you are what some people have called an Nvidia maximalist. And given the fact that we talked about people's savings and people's what they have on RSPs, TFSAs, and 401ks as potentially being rugged, it's a terrible way to
leave me, bro. I'm trying to get out of it. My wife and I continue to shop for a house. Well, that'll be the next t-shirt that I print for the show.
NFA, but like definitely I would exit out of all those positions right away and just continually buy Bitcoin. But again, it's not financial advice, just my
NFA as always. God bless everyone. We'll see you Wednesday with Jared talking about acceleration theory. I may or may not be there for that. I have to see what my schedule is like on Wednesday. I got some other stuff I have to do, personal stuff. So but if I can make it,
he just jumped out of a plane recently too. So I want to hear his experience with that.
That kid is a bit of a firecracker for sure. He's a live wire, that young fella. So we'll look forward to talk to him. We'll see you guys in the after show. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube and let's vibe for a bit before the Celtics game.
Take care and PV.